19th, 2015 meeting of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. We are convened. We have an agenda on fermentation this morning, and very pleased that Oregon State University has a very large turnout for this. And with that, I would like to call forward, please, Bill Bodges.
Thank you.
Good morning, and welcome to our committee.
Good morning, and thank you, Chairman Witt, for this invitation. I am Bill Bogus. I'm the Executive Associate Dean of the College of Agricultural Sciences at Oregon State University, and am very pleased to be here to talk about the Fermentation Sciences Program more broadly, and as part of that, some of the funding that was provided in the last biennium for Fermentation Sciences.
And very good.
There's an additional ask as part of the college's or the experiment station's request for basically the second half of the funding that was requested in the previous biennium. So what we thought we would do today is I'll just give you a little bit of an overview of the Fermentation Sciences Program broadly at Oregon State and how it mirrors, in fact, the Oregon industries that it's intended to support in terms of research and outreach and workforce development. And then we'll have four pairs of individuals that we'll call up, industry and university partner in each case, one around brewing, one pair around brewing, one pair around dairy and cheese, one pair around viticulture and wine, and then one pairing around workforce development and sort of the jobs piece. And we'll weave in a little bit about some things we can't put in the bread dimensions and the sort of evolving cider and distillation pieces as well. But if I brought in six teams, you'd be here all morning. And so I've asked each of those two teams to take a maximum of 15 minutes, 5 minutes each, with 5 minutes for questions, and then we'll rotate those through, and that should still leave 15 minutes or so at the end for additional questions. So that's kind of the game plan that we have. And do I have control of the slides?
Get an affirmative, yes.
Okay. Do I just hit the I didn't even ask.
The arrow key on the right?
There arrow key. So, yeah. So there's just the introductory slide that I just sort of talked my way through. Let me get set up here. The So Oregon's fermentation-based industries, the cheeses, wines, microbrews, increasingly ciders, and distilled products are all value-add industries. And if you sort of start with the grapes or the hops or the small fruits, whatever sort of the base or the milk, we see that they add 2 to 30 times the value of the base ingredients. So these have a lot of lift in terms of the processing and conversion of the grapes to the wine or the milk to the cheese. And these industries are also share a common thing that they are not the large, it's not Kraft cheese, it's premium quality, they're differentiated in the market, and they sell at a relatively high price point. And the Oregon industries depend on that. We aren't going to compete with Gallo in the wine industry. Gallo, for example, will crush about as many grapes in one day as all of the Oregon industry does in a season. So it gives you a sense of the scale. So we're smaller scale, differentiated products, high price points, and that depends on then premium quality. And part of the Oregon story is our premium quality is based on Oregon-grown inputs. So you'll see we're really focused on everything from soil to shelf in terms of supporting these industries. The other thing about most of these industries, brewing, wine, and particularly more recently cider and now distilled spirits, are growing at double-digit growth for the last decade. So it's just and kind of a statewide footprint. So our fermentation sciences program at Oregon State actually dates back to the 90s, but it's basically partly because of the nature of our industry. It's one of the broadest in the nation. It's sort of mirroring the diversity in Oregon. We want to talk about the research outreach extension as well as workforce development and this idea of doing all the way from the soils to the shelf to what it tastes like and what people are willing to pay for. And then again, the we've been sort of the drive demand for our graduates and outreach questions and research needs is being driven by this rapid expansion and new people coming in and new challenges. So it so that's sort of the sense of our program. It actually started, probably we would trace it back to the Norwester Chair in Brewing, which was a donation by Jim Bernot back in the 90s. That's when we really first got into the brewing. And then the funding that was provided the last by him really helped us add on to that. So alluded to this already, but we have research in viticulture and grapes going into wine. We have the milk production at the dairy and then cheese and yogurt. The products, doing work in barley and hops and microbrewing, and then barley and wheat for bread. So I have a small bread program as well. And then more recently, the small fruits and stone fruits, pears and so forth for apples for spirits and cider. And I think there's a lot of that. It's kind of, you know, you see horticulture and food science, but there's a lot of other pieces of this. So the technical underpinnings across many disciplines, from business and marketing to dairy operations to flavor, analytical chemistry, sensory analysis for how these products taste and what makes them premium. The basic breeding, we have a hops breeding program, barley breeding program to try to create varieties that are unique and support the industries. The basic food science, the horticulture, and then a lot of microbiology as it relates to the fermentation process, and then some basic genomics work, more fundamental work as well. And then workforce development. So that's also an important product. We work, we have four-year degrees and graduate degrees. So places like Chemeketa and Umpqua have the two-year technical degrees in viticulture, and we work in partnership with them, try to support them. They serve a niche that we don't. We also work some with high school, high school programs like Yamhill Carleton have programs that serve part of the need. We really focus on the four-year degrees and on the and then on graduate degrees, and you'll hear a little bit more about that as well. So this is today's lineup. So I think the next step, Chuck, would be to invite Robin and Dirk Davis up and let them talk a little bit or chair and talk about the milk and cheese and yogurt piece. Unless you have questions for me at this point.
Questions or comments for Dean Bogus?
Yes. Talk about the degrees. The courses that you get at the two-year schools, are they transferable across to the four?
Yes. So one of the, just a real switch on that, Oregon State has dual degree enrollment with all of the community colleges in Oregon, and we started working on that back in the 90s. So you can actually dually enroll at Chemeketa and at OSU if you want to. So that was, and then the articulation agreements were written to really kind of streamline that. So that's worked pretty well.
Tremendous.
Thank you very, very much.
Yes. I'll stay up here just to help orchestrate a bit. So while they're up here, I'll give you brief introductions, and they can then introduce themselves a bit as well. But on the far left is sitting down here is Robin Frosian. Robin is our cheese pilot plant manager, and I call her the OSU master cheesemaker. I don't know if
I'll take it.
If you'll take that. And
I don't want to hide you either.
So Robin actually runs the cheese plant. Elizabeth Goddick is our Paul and Sandy Arbuth professor and the ODI Bodyfelt professor of dairy at OSU, and who's made some presentations in front of this group before, but she had a conflict, so we went directly to the cheesemaker. Okay. And to my immediate left is Dirk Davis, the CEO for Sunshine Dairy Foods, and he's brought some of their products to
they're empty though.
to give you a sense.
Some of them.
So, Robin, do you want to lead off, or is it Dirk? Whatever, you're up.
Sure.
Good morning. So as Dirk, as Bill said, my position is running the creamery and the pilot plant program at OSU, and we focus on innovation, training our students, bringing in community members to, as a business incubator, using our pilot plant.
Ms. Frogen, would you please, just for the record, introduce yourself?
Robin Frogen, OSU Creamery.
Thank you very much.
Bringing small businesses in to start their process of creating creameries in our program, allowing them 9 months use of our pilot plant to develop, raise capital, and a lot of the time while building their own creamery. Currently, we have TMK Farms utilizing the facility. They're a farm up in Canby, getting ready to start their own cheese plant. We've started with Full Circle Creamery and Cheese Louise out of Eugene as incubators for them. We also focus on food safety training for our students, as well as Oregon businesses can come down and be fully trained in HACCP training, which is hazard analysis of critical control points for their business, trained and certified, as well as better processing control school for food processing companies to get their employees certified and trained. And then our Beaver Classic Cheese Program, which is training our students through artisan cheese making, plant processes, production, documentation, and then we send them out into Oregon dairies to work. Go ahead, Dirk.
Good morning. I'm Dirk Davis, President and CEO of Sunshine Dairy. I have in front of you the results of this program. And again, I've got some live samples in the back if I can leave them. These are empties here. Last year we had an opportunity. Sunshine Dairy is a 79-year-old company, fourth generation family owned. We're in Portland. We have a milk processing plant on 20th right off of Sandy. And then we have a yogurt processing facility, 84th and Halsey. So we manufacture both milk, yogurt, ice cream, sour cream, cottage cheese. We leave the cheese to the students and to a little company down in Tillamook County. Most of our business is food service, or has been for the last 80 years. I've been the CEO for the last 2 years, 30 years in the industry. When I got to Sunshine, we've got an incredible brand, but it wasn't consumer forward, not a lot at retail. These items came out earlier this year. It's the first time that we've had these items in a Fred Meyer location in a big retail opportunity in 60 years. And I tell you that story because it came back where Oregon State had an opportunity for us to use a grad student in product development. We're a small company, and so I do not have an R&D program or an R&D department. And I was able to utilize the students to come up and work with us to help develop these items. It's the first new item that, second new item that we've come out with in the last year. In December 26th of 2013, I partnered with Joth Rickey, president and CEO at Stumptown, good friend, Oregon State as well. We're talking about Stumptown Coffee and what could we do together. And if you go, into one of their locations, people were taking their cold brew coffee, and they would go over to the station, and they'd add their own cream, and they'd add their own sugar. So we said, how do we do that? How do we take that experience that the consumer has in the store and make that for retail? And 6 months later, it was developed. Again, they had an OSU student that was on their team. The gentleman that also is one of their brewers, is a graduate from the program, Nate Armbrust. So those students are coming into our industries, and that's really important to me. I also have two labs, so I've got need for quality assistants and techs. I've got two Oregon State right now, one from college, two other colleges as well. But as Robin was telling you, when they come in, they're more trained. They've been through the program. They've got people that are coming in and using their facility. And so they, again, HACCP and food safety, which is so important to us in the last few years and will become more important to us on food safety. So their students are being trained. So I have the ability in this program to bring in quality assurance program students, research and development, product development. And then there's also a job career opportunity for them. I've got one that became a plant manager into product development, has since left me. But again, the opportunity to continue to grow. I've got one gentleman that is also running multiple businesses. When we come out with these items, it's a product manager. We also have another item coming September 1st. We'll have some more products, and students will be doing those as well. So for me, really impressed with the program, with the students, but it's the funding that you are allowing that's helping grow this program that supports Sunshine Dairy and the students. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, we have some time for a few questions for this group at this point.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you for that opportunity. Representative McEwen.
Vice Chair Witt, thank you. This is just, I think, music to my ears, certainly when we can see kind of the fruits of our labors coming back to show that it's been successful, an investment that we've made. So we're delighted to have you here today. I have a question for you. When a company comes in that's trying to do something new, for example, the company you said is using your facilities now to start to launch their own, how long do they stay with you? What's the average time span? What's the investment that you make in them while they're at Oregon State trying to do their product research?
I think that's a good question. Thank you. As I said, we give them up to 9 months to utilize the facility. I think 6 months is more of an average of how much time they're in there. They're initially paired with a student in the pilot plant, and the student is the one teaching them side by side the processes. We, Elizabeth Goddick and myself, will assist them side by side to troubleshoot, you know, if there's issues with their product. If they start making it and come up with, you know, a better process, we'll help them head in the right direction. Or we can also head off initial issues, whether it's in their formulation, whether it's in their building process. We're also there to be partners in assisting in designing and making their creamery workable to the best with the space that they're given.
That was going to be my second question. So do you also go out to their site and help them design their facility?
If need be, but we're usually working with seeing their plans, getting them to the right Oregon Department of Agriculture representative so that they're paired and starting things correctly from the very beginning.
Great. Thank you.
There are also times where they'll start there and they'll come up because I co-pack. Mm-hmm. And so they'll start there and they'll come up to a Sunshine or other co-packers and we'll take them and scale them after that. Okay. We'll get them out of their kitchen or
their garage or their barn.
Hopefully not garage.
Their barn.
Kitchen.
You could do wine and beer in a garage, but not cheese.
Okay. That's on the record. Clearly on the record. Thank you.
Food safety requirement. Challenge there.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Thank you. It's very interesting. Yeah.
Anything further?
The only other point, I would make about the cheese, and Robin mentioned the Beaver Classic cheese, but one of the, we're trying to model, and Parker is a graduate, so may speak about this a little bit, but the student-produced cheese, the Beaver Classic cheese, and there's now a number of different varieties there. We've tried to make that student from the very beginning to the end, from the business plan to the design of the label. The production of the milk comes from the OSU dairy, which is students are basically managing the dairies themselves and the cows. And so we're doing that same sort of soil to shelf there. And we don't have time today to talk about all the things that students can kind of get into in terms of building a business and having to sort out the things that didn't work and whatever, but it's a tremendous learning experience. So I just wanted to make that point that we're tied back to the dairy as well.
Vice Chair McLean.
I was just wondering how many small businesses or how many cheese businesses do you think you've started?
We've had three actually utilize the plant in the past 2 years. We've had, lots of other inquiries. We're regularly opening it up. We do a cheese class in October, and that's kind of where people start to develop their path. For the future. The other one thing I wanted to say is that so one of our original cheesemakers is now able to go out and see her product that she helped develop with Stumptown and
nice.
And Sunshine. And it just having my students be able to go out and find their products on the shelves just lifts
Chicago,
everybody.
New York, LA. So the at least the Stumptown has had the ability to have a nationwide reach.
So Elizabeth Gottick, who's not here, runs these cheese sort of quality training, HACCP training, and so forth for dairies. And so she spends quite a bit of time with Tillamook, which is probably our largest cheesemaker. So we have a lot of research support and outreach support for all of the industry, in addition to trying to provide the startup piece. But there's a pretty regular involvement there.
I have a follow-up.
Chairman,
is that mine? My husband spent 2 years working at the dairy when he was at Oregon State, and he was very proud of the fact that he used to hold the record for unloading a truck and tractor load of hay faster than anybody else. I don't know if that record still stands. It's been quite a while. But do you have opportunities for people to come and do continuing education classes? I'm thinking if you own a creamery or a cheese factory and you have people that are coming to work for you, can they come to you for training?
Yes, okay. We do. We do that a couple of times a year. We work side by side with the Oregon Cheese Guild, and people are either coming in through there or, through the university and utilizing HACCP training classes, better processing, different dairy and micro lab trainings.
Okay.
Three or four of us will, other dairies. So you've got Umpqua, Sunshine, Alpenrose. And when we make some of these items, we also resell each other's items. So the ecosystem in the state of Oregon is pretty tied together. Even though it's got my brand on that, I might not sell down in Southern Oregon. Umpqua will put those on their trucks. We'll make products for them. Eberhardt in Central Oregon, they make our cottage cheese. So there's a lot of coalition between the dairies. But we'll also send people down for additional training.
Great. Thank you.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how many people, graduate out of Oregon State every year with this degree or in this field, and how many openings are there in Oregon for this, and do some of these people get exported out of the state?
So we're going to actually have a team come up on workforce development, so I think the expertise to answer that question is in the room, but I don't think it's here.
Very good.
At the table at the moment.
Thank you.
So we'll hold that for Bob McGorn.
Well, I took a tour of the fermentation program at OSU here several years back, and I can just say that the blue cheese is unsurpassed, and that alone it's worth the trip there. So,
so I think we will rotate to the next group. So, thank you, Dirk. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Team Jeff. So, on my far left is Jeff Cawson, and Jeff is the pilot plant manager and OSU master brewer. To my immediate left is Jeff Eckerton, the Bridgeport Brewing brewmaster, and they're going to introduce themselves officially for the record, but then give you a little bit of background about the brewing hops sort of barley program, and we'll have a similar opportunity for a few questions around that. So welcome. Thank you.
Good morning. Super. Thank you for your appearance.
Good morning. I'm Jeff Clausen. I manage our food processing plant as well as our research brewery at Oregon State. And before I get into my stuff, I just want to say the Sunshine Dairy and Stumptown Coffee, Nate Armbrust, who was instrumental in making this happen, the research and development person at Stumptown, he was the very first undergraduate research brewery helper at Oregon State. So he was
you're taking
a product
credit
of mine. I'm taking credit for Nate.
All right.
So our brewing science program at OSU is essential to the Oregon brewing industry and Oregon agriculture. And we're very proud to offer students a grain-to-glass education. We prepare them to be leaders in the brewing industry. And we add value to Oregon agricultural commodities through our cutting-edge, globally relevant brewing science research. We work closely with the Oregon brewing industry, solving production issues and improving quality. The craft brewing industry in the United States has grown in leaps and bounds in the past decade. Last year, it grew by 18% in volume, and the year before, 18% in volume. This industry is growing rapidly. In Oregon, the craft brewing production increased almost 17% last year. It provided 800 new jobs, and right now it directly employs about 7,400 people here in the state, indirectly about 30,000 people. Most of those at family wages. So 20% of the beer consumed in Oregon is made in Oregon. So that means 80% is actually exported out of Oregon. So that's money that comes back into our coffers. There's 220 breweries operating in the state in 71 cities. So it's throughout the state of Oregon we have breweries. It's estimated that we bring in about $2.83 billion to the state economy. So how does Oregon State help aid this industry? Well, we educate tomorrow's brewers. Our students are taught in small groups with a focus on experiential learning, similar to what happens in the dairy. Our students get in, they get hands-on, so it supplements what they learn in the classroom. The very stringent education that they get in food science with lots of chemistry and biology and microbiology, physics, engineering, all that is supplemented with hands-on experience. So when they go out in the industry, they know how to work pumps. They know how to hook up valves and move hoses. They actually get hands-on experience with us. Our graduate and undergraduate brewing students carry out research that has direct impact to the Oregon brewing industry. We educate current brewers through professional and continuing ed, through workshops and working through professional organizations like the Oregon Brewers Guild or the Master Brewers Association of the Americas. In the industry, 85% of our brewing students are employed within 3 months of graduation. We used to say that we had 100% placement, but now with over 150 students focused on beer, it's tough for us to track where they go. We work closely with the OSU and USDA hop breeding programs to vet new hop varieties that are grown here in the Willamette Valley by Oregon farmers. We also work with the barley breeders to test new varieties of barley that's bred at Oregon or grown specifically for Oregon farms to eventually go into malt that will go into beer. So we're looking to try and get Oregon barley into Oregon breweries. OSU graduates occupy leadership positions in breweries across the nation and around the world, and we collaborate with Oregon breweries to help develop award-winning beers. Our students take on summer internships, learning in an industry environment, while helping breweries during their peak production season. So typically that's over the summer, which works out great for our students and works out great for the brewing industry. We've grown a lot as a department. We are, 10 years ago, we had about 25 undergraduates that had a focus with a career in brewing. Now we have over 150. So we're struggling to maintain our superior level of education. Our pride in offering a hands-on brewing experience is slowly slipping away as increases in class sizes coming about. So this concept of learn by doing is slipping away a little bit from us. We have only one fully funded FTE in brewing. We need to offer more brewing-specific coursework for students and for existing brewers in the industry. So right now, Oregon State is leading the nation in brewing education. We have the largest brewing research center and the largest number of undergraduates in the nation. It's vital that we maintain that leading edge to aid this growing industry. Money that came in from the previous ask from you guys, we've used some of that money to expand the capabilities and throughput of our hop analysis lab, where all these new hops that are being bred, these new varieties in Oregon, we need to analyze those and see how they vet with the industry and how they're actually used by the industry. The idea is to maintain our cutting edge of Oregon hops, because Oregon hops are sought after, and we want to make sure we maintain that. We're in the process of building out the barley and malting facilities that we have for our research, so we can actually take barley varieties that are bred at OSU, malt them, produce beer with them, and then send them up and down the I-5 corridor and have brewers taste these beers and know that Oregon barley will make good beer. And we're purchasing an alkalizer that will be used by the beer, wine, and distillation programs. It's about a $100,000 piece of equipment, and we're using about $22,000 from the fermentation money that you guys gave us last time to help purchase that equipment. And an investment in us is an investment in Oregon agriculture and Oregon business. That's my pitch.
Representative McEwen?
What is an alkalizer?
An alkalizer is a wonderful machine that you put beer into, and it will tell you what the alcohol content is. It'll tell you what the color of the beer is.
Okay.
It'll tell you what the carbon dioxide is, the carbon dioxide level. It'll also tell you what the real extract or the remaining sugar in the beer is.
Okay. Thank
you. So it's one machine that we can put samples in, and it'll give us a readout in about 2 minutes. Right now, to do each one of the assays individually will take someone approximately 45 minutes to an hour to do one sample.
Very accurate as well.
And very accurate. Yep, we can use it to report to the Tax and Trade Bureau, the federal government agency that oversees us.
Capturing carbon through drinking beer.
There you go.
Carbon sequestering, that sort of thing.
Okay. My name is Jeff Edgerton. I'm the brewmaster of Bridgeport Brewing Company. I grew up in Oregon. I've been fortunate enough to have a front row seat to the brewing industry and to also be able to develop a career in brewing. I graduated from Oregon State in 1987. Unfortunately, at that time, they did not have a brewing program, so my degree is in microbiology, but I was able to work through different brewing schools and through a lot of experienced people that I worked with at my first job, which was at Blitz Weinhardt, which for the people that are here that are Oregon residents or have been Oregon residents for a long time, Blitz Weinhardt was a 1.8 million barrel regional brewery that was in downtown Portland, closed in 1999. I left there in 1998 to go work for Bridgeport Brewing Company, so my timing was pretty good actually, but. Employed about 250 people at that time. That was kind of the brewing industry in Oregon, as far as that goes. There were some breweries in Washington as well, but that was the brewing industry in Oregon. Now you can see how things have grown. We have 7,400 people employed in brewing in the state of Oregon versus the 250 that were employed at Blitz Weinhardt. So it's been quite the evolution since that time frame has happened. So. Jeff quoted some really good numbers as far as, I was looking at, because I actually came in 2013 and made a similar pitch, actually, and I brought my sheet up and I was looking at it versus how much the growth has been at that time in 2013, 169 breweries. Now we have 220 in the state of Oregon. $2.83 billion versus $2.44 billion in 2013. It's growing. It's growing fast. It's growing hard. If you go to Safeway, Fred Meyer's, Whole Foods, look at the beer aisle, you can tell exactly how much there's out there. A lot of competition in the brewing industry as well. Huge amount of competition from breweries across the country. Oregon breweries are right up there with the competition. We still lead the industry. If you're familiar with the craft brewing conference that just occurred in Portland a few weeks back, you'll see that an average convention at the convention center, probably a couple thousand people. There's 11,000 people that showed up for the craft brewing conference. So if that tells you anything about the craft brewing industry, there's a huge amount of money that poured into the city of Portland that day, that week. As you all know, brewing is a natural fit. Jeff was talking about some things as far as hops and barley being grown in the United States. I can attest to the fact that in Oregon, the hops that are grown here are superb. The hop growers here are some of the finest in the world. They're working really hard to develop new varieties for the hop for the brewing industry. We're always, as craft brewers and being as competitive as we are, we're always looking for that next really cool and interesting hop that we want to brew with. And the hop growers have responded to that in great strides. So it's a very important thing for us for the industry. So that brings me around to brewing as a very esoteric career. It's not something that is intuitive to anybody that comes out of school necessarily, that just comes out with a basic degree. As I come out with a microbiology degree from Oregon State University, I didn't know anything about brewing. I knew very little about it. I knew how yeast reacted. I knew how yeast fermented sugar into alcohol. Knew very little about actually making beer, what the process was of making beer. There's very few programs. We have 7,400 people employed in the state of Oregon. Very few programs in the country to teach people how to brew. You can go to Germany, you can go to England and learn how to brew. Very expensive, very difficult thing to do. And if you don't speak German, it's a little tough to do sometimes too. So having a program at Oregon State University has been incredible for us because we've been able to develop a relationship with the university and the students that come there. We hire two interns every year. We bring them in for summer work. We pay them to work. We work them really hard. They learn about the parts of brewing that they really love and the parts that maybe they might not love quite as much, but it's about learning how to work, learning how to be an actual brewer in the process. They're very well educated. They know everything they really should know about the process of making beer, and we teach them about what it is to pull hoses around and run pumps and make beer. There's basically three programs in the United States. Oregon State University, I would put up with any of the other two programs that are available right now. They've progressed to that point where they're producing high-quality brewers, good people. Several of those people we've actually hired as permanent employees. So if you walk around Bridgeport, you'll find that you talk to people in there. A lot of them come from Oregon State University in some shape, way, or form. Another thing that's happened with, we use the pilot facility at Oregon State University to develop new products. This is something we do on a very regular basis. In fact, right now we have some, I think as we speak, we have some brewers down there filtering some beer that we're bringing back up to do some tasting this afternoon of some pilot brews we have down there. So at any given time, we probably do 15 or 20 pilot brews every year down on the pilot brew facility down there right now. It's a little bit of an arduous process, but we can't really put ourselves in the position of having that pilot brew facility. And when I do a pilot brew at Bridgeport, I have to do at least 50 barrels at a time, which is 100 kegs worth of beer. That's not really a pilot brew. That's sometimes that's a waste of money, is what that is actually. So you have to be we have to use something like this pilot brewery at Oregon State. I know there's quite a few smaller breweries that are our size or maybe even smaller that use the pilot facility down there for doing this kind of research. We have the other thing we've done, we've integrated the students and the faculty of the Brewing Science Program with the Master Brewers Association. The Master Brewers Association is the largest brewing organization, I think, in the world, actually. It's throughout the United States and Central America. We have the largest section in the Northwest. There are no large brewers in the Northwest section at all. The largest brewer in the Northwest section, I believe, is Widmer Brewing, or CBA, Craft Brewers Alliance. There's no Anheuser-Busch, Miller, Coors in the Northwest section. There's over 400 members in the Northwest section. We will have meetings where we have 400 people come to the meeting. They're very active people. The students are a huge part of that. We'll have 25 to 30 students. They will make presentations. They come in. They interact with the industry, and they're very much a part of the Master Brewers Association. So, am I out of time? I've got a little bit more to go.
Okay.
So, something that the Master Brewers has done for this, since we are very, 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 very fond of the Oregon State students, and they're very much a part of us, we actually made an endowment a few years back. We actually committed $25,000 endowment for education, for a scholarship endowment for Oregon State University, and so that's something from our coffers as an organization. We decided to make that donation, donate that cash, and then also my company. Just recently, as it was announced during the CBC, my company values what Oregon State does so much that the owner of my company is going to be making, or has made already, a $1 million donation to Oregon State University to build a new pilot brewery that will be state-of-the-art and allow the students to have all this flexibility of having a new pilot brewery. Now, that sounds like a big gift, and it is a nice gift, and I'm very, very proud of my company to do that. But at the same time, that money will be rapidly ate up when we build this new pilot brewery. So they definitely need the funds to keep moving forward with the research on this thing. So that's what I have.
Thank you both. Vice Chair McLean.
Well, I feel like we're just living the Oregon experience today, because I really love the whole idea of, you know, from soil to glass, or from, you know, basically the product, you know, all the way to the table. And it's exciting, and also just to see how you are embracing local students, you know, in the actual development, I think is great. My personal experience of being in the Woodburn, Mount Hood, or the Mount Angel area, and Canby, was that there were a lot of hops, right? I just love those hops. And as a kid, we had a neighbor that had a hop barn, and man, we wanted to get in that barn and see those hops as they were drying, and the smell and everything else. I mean, it's just really unique. And so it feels good to hear you talk about how it's an Oregon product, again, from soil to glass.
I always tell people that grew up in the Midwest, they're used to growing up around corn. Mm-hmm. When I grew up, there were hop fields just down the road from where
right.
I grew up, too. So, yeah,
and it's such exactly. a unique crop. I mean, and it's how it's grown and
exactly.
how it's put together. But one of the things that you said that I thought was really interesting was the idea of small business again, that we're looking again at small businesses and they're flourishing because of the high-end crop or the high-end product or the high-end drink. And I just wanted you to maybe talk a little bit about how do you have 400 small businesses be able to create a culture where, you know, it's unique and yet it's still profitable.
Well, it is unique because I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, when we go down and have this interaction with the students, you see people that are very extremely creative people. I mean, we all know this. Portland is a very creative city. The state of Oregon is a lot of very creative people, and they see these natural ingredients, this plethora of different ingredients, these varieties of hops with incredibly different aromas and flavors and things that come out of this. And so, you know, these people naturally want to make incredibly different products out of this thing, and so we have this, and I'm very good friends with a lot of the brewers in the area. We have a very unique thing in our industry is the fact that even though we're competitors, we're actually real good friends. We all like each other. We have meetings together. We play together. We drink together. We have we do things together as a group, and this is one of the things that I think the students understand, and they realize that, you know, you can be creative and be competitive, but still work together as an industry, and this is where it really does come together for us. So.
Representative McEwen.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Couple of things. You mentioned that your program is growing, and you're getting a little bit away from that hands-on experience, and you're producing more students, which is a good thing, I would think. How many out-of-state students come in or are attracted to this program?
We get quite a few out-of-state programs or out-of-state students coming in. A lot of them are post-bacs,
okay.
where they're kind of doing a second career.
Sure.
Right now I've got two of my brewers are from Michigan, and we have a few Oregon native students as well. But we do have quite a few that come from out-of-state to our program. That being said, we have easily half, if not more, that are interested in beer that are Oregon native students.
And of the students that come from out of state, do a lot of them go back where they came from? They're here to to actually get an education, or do they want to stay?
Actually, they want to stay. Once you get to Oregon, it's hard to leave.
Hard to leave.
and that's one of the things that I wanted to focus on, is that this Oregon industry is growing, and we're helping to supply the workforce for this growth. But you have to understand that most of the students that come here want to stay in Oregon, and it's important for them to have jobs when they graduate.
And that leads into my second question, that you're producing all these very well-educated, wonderful students. Are we at risk of saturating the market? I mean, is there a hunger in this market for more?
There's always that risk, yeah. And there's actually 40 new brewing programs on the horizon throughout the United States and Canada. Right now, we are leading the charge as far as educating students. And it's well known in the industry that Oregon State graduates are going to be top quality graduates, and those are the students that you want to hire.
And I follow up, sir.
Please.
I'm making an assumption that there is no gatekeeper on your program. Anybody that wants in can get in. Do you limit the entry into your program?
Yeah, I think Bob will address that when he's talking about workforce development.
Okay, great. And just one quick follow-up on the alkalizer, am I pronouncing it? What was the name of that?
An alkalizer.
Is that commercialized for Oregon State? I mean, do you make money? Do brewers bring in samples so that you can run them through your system?
Exactly.
Or is this just for your own use at Oregon State?
No, we do a lot of contract work with breweries, not only beer development, but we'll do analytical testing as well.
And this is part of their oversight that they need to go through for the regulations that they have to follow, so they can come
That's
to you and you can
a
make
of,
a few bucks on that machine.
Yeah,
I guess that's what I'm asking.
Small Oregon breweries don't have access to the kind of equipment that we're trying to get, so we can not only train our students how to use this equipment, but have that equipment available to the breweries that can't afford it.
Great. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As far as funding, I think the $1 million gift to Oregon State is great. The Oregon brewing industry in general, do they have do they privately help fund Oregon State's programs?
Yeah, we get we get gift money from the Craft Brewers Alliance, the Widmer Group. We also get a lot of support in kind from Deschutes and Full Sail, most of the larger brewers. The smaller brewers, we need to help subsidize those folks. They're spending all their money on advertising and trying to get their brand out. The larger brewers that are established, like Bridgeport and Deschutes and Widmer and those guys, provide a lot of support to us. We lean on them.
There is in the dairy industry and the wine industry sort of checkoff funds that come are available for competitive grants. There's nothing quite equivalent in the brewing industry, but in the I hear from the wine industry, they're allocating over $300,000 a year for competitive viticulture, enology sort of research projects. And the dairy industry has some similar funding that Elizabeth Goddick has used. But this has been more individual relationships with the firms providing either funding or in-kind support. So I think we'll rotate to the next group. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm inviting up Mark Chen, who's a program coordinator for the Oregon Wine Research Institute, and Sam Tannehill, who's a founder and director of viticulture and winemaking at A to Z Wineworks Rexhill. And welcome both, and state your name for the record as you start. So, Mark.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
I'm Mark Chen. I'm the program coordinator for the Oregon Wine Research Institute. And I'd like to just go back a little bit in time and say I was a wine grower here in Oregon in a vineyard just north of Salem for 16 years. And during that time, always cooperated with OSU faculty and graduate students. We had them doing experiments constantly in our vineyard. And so it was great for me to come back to OSU and continue to work there and with our faculty in a very different capacity. The Institute is based at OSU, And it's really a pleasure for me to be here to explain how legislative fermentation science funds have really allowed us to continue a 40-year tradition of research at OSU to support the wine industry, and how it continues to improve grape and wine quality in a sector of Oregon's agricultural landscape that has a total economic impact of $3.5 billion per year. The Institute, which I'll refer to as OWRI, was created by a $2 million initiative directly from the wine industry, and Sam was part of that in 2009. Its purpose is to foster collaborative research by diverse faculty between different departments at OSU and USDA Agricultural Research Service Unit based in Corvallis that will improve the quality and sustainability of Oregon grapes and wines. Besides working with each other, we are close partners with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, the Oregon Wine Board, the Oregon Wine Growers Association, industry-driven sustainable organizations, as well as educational institutions like Chemeketa and Umpqua Community Colleges. Our research knowledge and expertise is shared with wine growers across Oregon and, in fact, across the world through our outreach and extension efforts. The Oregon Wine Research Institute method of research is called Vine to Wine. So we've talked a lot about soil to shelf here, and we follow the same formula. In frequent consultation with Oregon wine industry leaders, we strive to provide relevant, practical, visionary, science-driven knowledge and technology and practices to wine growers across the state, and to provide a continuum of research from grape to bottle. Currently, OWRI receives about $316,000 annually in fermentation science funds. These have been allocated in the past as research enabling funds, allowing our faculty to enhance existing research programs and address new issues that facing the Oregon wine industry. For example, in 2014, fermentation science funds were used to study an insidious new virus that's affecting grapevines in Oregon called grapevine red blotch. Red blotch can affect the health and productivity of grapevines as well as the wine that they produce. Last year, a faculty research assistant was hired in fermentation sciences to support our knowledge team. Our faculty then can focus on their primary mission and not spend quite so much time doing tasks like cleaning winery equipment and recording large quantities of data. Wine quality is an uncompromising goal of the Oregon wine industry, and OSU Research has worked with them for decades to create a world-class wine industry. Fermentation science enabling funds allow OWRI faculty to work on critical grape and wine quality issues identified with the help of the wine industry. For example, in the vineyard, Dr. Vaughn Walton, our entomologist, develops integrated pest management strategies for harmful invasive insects, species such as brown marmorated stink bug and spotted wing Drosophila. BMSB can taint high-quality wines and lower their value. Spotted wing Drosophila can cause serious problems with fruit rots that detract from grape wine and quality. Dr. Laurent DeLuc uses genetic markers to study uniform berry and cluster ripening, a key to high-quality production of wines that can add to the value of our products. Dr. Patty Skinkas developed long-term statewide crop load trials that addresses issues of optimal quality to achieve the highest possible grape quality. An additional 500 pounds per acre of grapes can add $5,000 to $8,000 of additional wine revenue to the business. In the winery, Dr. Elizabeth Tomasino does critical wine chemistry and sensory analysis on grape and wine experiments, which is the final and vital step before a wine reaches the consumer. She works closely with winemakers on her sensory panels and is currently doing descriptive analysis of wines from Oregon's American viticulture areas. Dr. James Osborne manages the OSU Research Winery and does important work on wine, yeast, and bacterial spoilage, and provides vital extension support to our winemakers. His work with spoilage organisms has likely saved countless bottles of wine from turning to vinegar. Andy Swan is located at our OSU research station in Southern Oregon and is doing critical work in water, vine water use and irrigation and canopy and crop management. The work will benefit other warm and dry wine producing areas like Central Oregon, the Columbia Gorge, and the Columbia River Basin in Eastern Oregon, which are some of our most exciting and fastest growing wine regions. In the future, additional fermentation science funds would allow OWRI to hire a full-time vineyard manager for our Woodhull Research Vineyard to support ongoing and expanded viticulture research projects. It will allow OWRI to expand critical research and extension education programs and projects into such important areas as the identification of the fundamental components of wine flavor and aromas, and the use of genetic markers to improve grapevine health, performance, and quality. We can also add faculty expertise in areas such as consumer demand and marketing of differentiated value-added products, including but not limited to wine. Finally, additional fermentation sciences funds will help us keep pace with the increasing demand for research and outreach as the Oregon wine industry continues to expand, especially in the south and east regions of Oregon. I'd also like to say that our faculty are heavily involved in teaching and producing students who find jobs out in the Oregon wine industry. Student interns are placed in many Oregon wineries. And just a little bit of workforce development. We work with the Erath Family Foundation and Chemeketa Community College to support their viticulture and enology vocational program. So that's my background on the Oregon Wine Research Institute, and I thank you very much. And I'll turn it over to Sam Tannehill now.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Sam Tannehill. I am the co-founder of A to Z Wineworks. Just to give you a picture of our business, A to Z sort of mirrors the wine industry in Oregon. A to Z was founded by myself, my wife, and another couple in 2002 when we made 2,500 cases of wine. Last year, we had a 375,000 case production. So we are now vie with King Estate for the largest winery in Oregon. We're sold in 50 states and 8 international markets. So it's been a really interesting past few years. I'll have my 21st harvest in Oregon this year, and I cannot remember a time that either the harvest or the growing season in those 21 years did not go by without direct collaboration with OSU at the University in Corvallis or through the Extension Service. I'd also like to thank you for your support of this dynamic industry over the past years and look forward to your support as we move forward. I'd like to give I know my colleague Tom Danowski was here a few weeks ago and telling you a little bit more about the industry and giving you a picture of where we stand now, but I thought I would go back over some of those numbers because I do believe that they're important. As has been mentioned, the Oregon wine industry in 2013 contributed $3.5 billion annually toward the Oregon economy. It's a great number, but also really fantastic is that it has a growth from 2.7 billion in 2010. So the industry is growing and thriving. Wine-related jobs in Oregon totaled 17,000 in 2013 versus 13,500 in 2010. Right now in Oregon, we have over 600 wineries packaging and selling wine across the United States and internationally. We have over 900 vineyards. Give you a little bit better picture of the industry. The average Oregon winery produces 4,800 cases. So while my winery is large, it tends to be the exception. Most wineries in Oregon are small family-owned affairs that rely on OSU for their research and development. Even as a large winery, we rely on OSU for our research and development as well. We currently have 3 projects going with OSU, both in the vineyard and the winery, that directly influence how we act in our winery and our vineyards. I think that's important. When you look at research, you have to ask yourself, how will this change our behavior? How will it save money on the bottom line? Or how will it increase the quality of our product? And certainly every project that we enter into OSU, that question is answered. We do change our behavior by these projects that we collaborate with OSU. As has been mentioned before, Oregon is fairly small when you look at the total world wine industry. In fact, Oregon commands 0.4% of national wine sales. However, we compete very strongly on quality with that 0.4 national sales percentage of the market. When you look at the sort of the Bible of the wine critics, the Wine Spectator, a full 13% of 90-plus point wines released in the United States in 2014, globally released, not just from the United States, were from Oregon. So even though we command 0.4%, we have 13% of all 90-plus point wines in the United States, which is a great figure and absolutely due to the collaboration that we've had with OSU. We will never be able to compete on quantity with our neighbors to the south nor our neighbors to the north, but we will certainly be able to go toe-to-toe with quality with any wine region in the United States. We also command double the average price point of California wines and 50% higher the average price point than Washington wines. And that is directly related to the quality of our wine. Most of our jobs in the wine industry and the growth in the wine industry are in rural areas of the state. For every 10 acres of vineyard that we plant, it equals one job in a rural area. And we do not grow vineyards in urban areas. We grow them in rural areas. And I think the largest growth that we've seen in vineyard plantings in the past year have been in southern Oregon and in the Columbia Gorge. So those are new areas that are rapidly expanding in Oregon that really need the jobs. Working with OSU, we were able to solve problems that are uniquely Oregon, and OSU has been able to give us uniquely Oregon solution to those problems. To give you an idea of the challenges that we face now in the wine industry, because we are, after all, an agricultural product. We may be a little bit of a glorified agricultural product, but we are a agricultural product. After surviving one of the coolest years in the history of Oregon, 2011. Every year subsequently has been one of the warmest years that we've seen in the history of the state for the growing season and the harvest. In fact, this year we had the warmest average winter in Oregon, average temperatures in the winter in Oregon, and we've seen the earliest bud break in the vineyards, and we expect to have the earliest harvest. When I first entered the industry in 1995, we were harvesting. It would be rare to harvest before the third week in September. This year, we fully expect to be harvesting in the last week in August. And with that warming trend comes a set of unique challenges for Oregon that we need to be able to solve. As much as our industry is sustainable, we have the highest percentage of sustainably certified vineyards of any wine region in the United States. We accept that changes are coming no matter what we do, and we need to learn to adapt. And the tip of that spear for that adaptation is OSU. Once again, small family wineries, 400 to 800 cases, basically $0 for research and development, and they lean heavily on Oregon State. In fact, many of our growers that we source grapes from the border with California up to Mosier in the Columbia Gorge. Most of those growers lean on OSU as their sole technical advice and expertise, both in the vineyard and in the wineries. Let's see what else. So I think a lot of the other topics have been mentioned before. We hire OSU graduates. We have OSU interns. We look forward to working with OSU more on having more interns and more graduates. I would think that our industry is actually in a deficit. We don't have enough students to employ from OSU to support the industry. Our industry is simply growing too fast. Therefore, we're bringing people from out of state and internationally. My first choice would be to hire from OSU at any time and if all possible, but we simply don't have enough students passing through through OSU to be able to supply the growth in the industry. The industry is very supportive, as has been mentioned before, of OSU. We contribute over $300,000 a year directly to research at OSU. We contributed over $2 million to the founding of the Oregon Wine Research Institute. There are other programs such as the Erath Family Foundation, grants and private donations to OSU that support research for the state. And I think to close, I could be here for not even a half an hour or a whole day talking about the close collaboration between the industry and OSU as it has evolved over the years. In my view, there has been no other time in the history of the Oregon wine industry that there has been such a close collaboration with OSU and the industry, that OSU is responsive to the industry's needs and is responsive to both basic research and applied research, and they're answering questions that have a direct impact on how we grow grapes, how we make wine, and even, I think, best for me as a business owner, a direct impact of the, on the bottom line. Through programs at OSU, I've been able to save money in the vineyard and money at the winery, and to hire more people with that money and to buy more grapes. So once again, I'd like to thank you for your support, and I apologize for not bringing samples this morning, but even in my business, it is perhaps a little bit early.
Chuck wouldn't let us.
Yes. Coffee, perhaps, is more appropriate this morning. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so very much. Questions or comments? Vice Chair McLean.
Well, I've got the experts in front of me. So I've been reading these articles in the paper about California wine and arsenic levels.
Yes.
What's going on there? And we don't have those problems, right?
We don't have those problems. As far as from what I understand, a lot of the arsenic levels that are found in some of our competitors' wines in to the south of us are from, no one seems to know directly where they're coming from, but the current research is that it's leached into the water table and that the irrigation is being applied to the vineyards and then there's an uptake on the grapes. Once again, we have a very sustainable industry here. We have seen some water issues with our friends down in southern Oregon and up in the Columbia Gorge and in Walla Walla. Luckily, in the Willamette Valley, we have no water issues as of yet, but we do need to do research and figure out that we're that we do not have that issue in our wines moving forward.
Yes, we're actively involved in trying to create the most sustainable wine industry that we possibly can, and in fact, as Sam mentioned, if you include organic and biodynamic vineyard acres, proportionally we're the largest in the United States, and the whole focus there is reducing off-farm inputs into the vineyard, reducing the use of synthetic chemicals, and trying to minimize the environmental and health impacts of farming wine grapes.
I'd also like to point out that when you farm sustainably, you do not have as large of a toolbox as farming conventionally and using some of those products. And when we have more challenging climates, such as 2013, where we suffered 7 inches of rain in the middle of harvest, we need to be able to draw on research done by OSU that gives us more access to tools that are sustainable. A to Z Wineworks was the first B Corporation certified winery in the world last year, and for us, it's an extremely important thing that we know the right tools to use.
And we really try to work with some of the private organizations like Oregon Low Input Viticulture and Enology to provide research support to them, as well as education in their program, so that they can help wineries like A to Z to farm sustainably.
Thank you.
Representative McEwen.
Thank you, Chair Witt. I'm familiar with an organic designation, but I'm not as familiar with the term biodynamic. What does it take to get a biodynamic certification?
Do you have 3 days?
Give me the one-minute version.
We actually farm biodynamically on a large portion of our vineyards, and we're certified by the international certification system called Demeter, which certifies biodynamically. Biodynamics is basically it's a program that was founded by a philosopher named Rudolf Steiner in the early 1900s. Rudolf Steiner also founded the Waldorf School of Education, the largest private educational system in the world, and so it's out of biodynamics, organics was born. And so farming biodynamically is farming more than organically. It's it is a long explanation.
It's trying for a closed system. In other ways, it's trying to actually have a closed system. So some of the biodynamics I'm familiar with will add chickens and
cows
and other things, and so they recycle the manure and almost try to, where there's nothing coming in or out. It's sort of that
philosophy as part of it.
It's a closed system that tries to be able to create a very healthy farm so that when there are critical events such as weather or pests, the recovery time is very quick. Okay. And it's really only using natural substances applied at very specific times and very little input, but utilizing those substances very strongly in the farm. We create all of our own compost from our winery waste. We try to have as little input as possible and maximum quality and quantity as an output.
Follow up?
Oh. Please.
Would that include, I've been to some wine seminars where the topic of yeast is a big topic of conversation, and are there times when in a situation like that you're using the yeast that's naturally occurring in the vineyard so you wouldn't be introducing yeast? Is that part of that?
Absolutely. Our program uses mainly what we call indigenous yeast. Okay. All yeasts are natural, whether you purchase them from a supplier or use them from what you find in the vineyard. But we found with the research at OSU that we will actually have 22 to 25 different yeast strains fermenting our wine. Those yeast strains are, no matter where you ferment, whether at OSU or at a winery in the Willamette Valley, they are a marker of that particular vineyard, and they contribute to different layers of flavor that make those wines uniquely from that vineyard. And that's literally a project that OSU has been working on with James Osborne, which is eye-opening.
And I would say that Seven Dogs does make a pack in my regard. I'm looking at your website. And it's nice that you have 21 people using stand-up desks. I'm a big fan.
Yes, I should mention we have 57 employees, and we're also responsible for another 300 employees from fruit that we source, and it seems like we're growing at an employee every other month. But, yes, everybody uses stand-up desks except for our winemaker. He's reluctant to change. But
57 people at 21 desks, you got to stand up.
Representative Frederick, followed by Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are seeing such an incredible growth, but there's got to be a dynamic of some concern about vineyards versus other crops versus other farming efforts. We had some discussion several weeks ago here regarding pesticide and how much that might overlap with vineyards. Where are we on that, and what are your thoughts on how we manage to bring those several different kinds of farming efforts together?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I was involved with the Oregon Department of Agriculture's spray drift mitigation program that Director Koba began at the request of the Oregon Wine Growers Association. And for me, that was just a spectacular example of how diverse industries and organizations in Oregon can get together and work together to solve a common problem. Now, the focus was on vineyards, which are a highly sensitive crop to an herbicide called 2,4-D, which can drift and find its way onto grapevines and harm them. But what Director Koba did was get everybody who was spraying these herbicides together, and that includes ODOT, included utility companies, it included people in agriculture who you would never find in the same room together, wheat, grass seed, dairy, anybody who's using these herbicides. And we got in the room together and we talked about how to manage this problem. And what came out of it was a significant education effort, which OSU provided a lot of the material for and helped ODA develop. And then also involved commercial retailers like Wilco, who, if you go into a Wilco store today, when you go to the section of the store that sells herbicides, 2,4-D, which you'll use to control dandelions in your grass, you'll see a shelf talker that will direct you to an OSU website that has information about spray drift mitigation. These people got in the room together, They might have been adversaries in the past, you know, over the spray drift issue, but we knew we had a problem to solve, and ODA told us to solve it, and that's what we did. So this communication effort, education effort continues today. But that's what we can do to solve problems together and how we can work together. I think this was a shining example of that.
Follow up to
Slade.
Your is the concern within this the drift damage to the vines, or is it because of our reputation in terms of organic and the organic wines, or is it both?
I think it's mostly the concern about drift, non-target drift into vineyards that can damage the vines. This drift generally won't kill the vines, but it can certainly damage a crop. And last year we had estimates of damage in the, to vineyards in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And if you translate that out to wine, it's even more. So it was definitely a problem that needed to be controlled. Now, certainly in Sam's organic and biodynamic vineyards, pesticide materials like this are not allowed to be used. However, what happens if a neighbor may spray it, a corn grower, or even a neighbor who was just trying to control blackberry in his or her yard may spray it, and it can affect the neighboring vineyard.
That actually happened to me, and I had to remove the vineyard that was affected for 3 years from organic certification and biodynamic certification. So to take that out is one of our main marketing tenets in how we sell our wine. Oregon wine is marketed out there in the world as green and sustainable, and to have that challenge, it can be difficult. However, there's been coexistence in many other states and many other regions of the world that I think is easily attainable today. And OSU has been at the forefront of developing mechanical sprayers and working with mechanical sprayers that limit drift. So I'm optimistic. Where I see a challenge moving forward is actually pressure on natural resources as we see more development of agriculture and more grapes. And I look forward to working with OSU on figuring out ways to limit our impact on those natural resources. Resources as we move forward.
Thanks. So, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to the next group.
If I could have one more, yep. We'd have a couple more questions if you want.
Just a real quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Export, how much of your wine, Sam, goes out of the state and how much out of the country?
Me particularly or the wine industry?
Yours.
I would say about 80% of what we make is exported out of the state. 5% is exported internationally. We're looking to grow that number next year. Is a rough cut of the industry, about 60% or 65% of what Oregon makes is exported out of the state. There are some great international success stories. I was speaking with a friend of mine, Alex Sokolblasser, last week, and a full 20% of what he makes is exported internationally. So I think that there is a tremendous room for growth and to move that out into the rest of the world.
And you mentioned warming climate, moving up the harvest of grapes, that sort of thing. What long-run impacts may this have on Oregon's wine industry, varietals, bottom line, those sorts of things?
We, like all other agricultural crops, are looking ahead towards that. Fortunately, grapevines are highly adaptive and can grow in fairly diverse conditions. That said, Oregon has sort of banked its future in Pinot Noir, which performs best under certain climate conditions. And so, for example, in order to address that, we just planted a brand new Pinot Noir block in our research vineyard near Corvallis, and we are going to experiment with different methods of training and trellising grapevines in order to mitigate the effects of additional heat so that we can keep the Pinot Noir within the climate parameters in which so Sam can make the best possible wine. So these are the kind of adaptive strategies that we're exploring in order to continue to produce the highest quality Pinot Noir in the world. In terms of grape varieties, we can certainly adapt to other varieties, but we have regions in the Columbia Valley and Southern Oregon that are already warm climate regions, and they explored a lot of this already. And then there's the usual problems that are created by climate change with insect pests in particular, but also fungal diseases. And certainly our faculty will be looking very closely at that and trying to develop management strategies for those issues.
I think that's the biggest challenge as we move forward are those insect pests that are vectors for viral diseases that would normally die out in a cold winter. Uh-huh. And we're seeing those migrate up from California into Oregon. As far as the varieties, I think we've got a great climate for growing Pinot Noir many years into the future, and look forward to working with OSU even to do isolating yeast that produce less alcohol in the fermentation. So there are adaptive ways, but it's those viruses and fungal diseases which are going to put a huge pressure on the industry and the vineyards up here in the years to come.
Gentlemen, thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much.
Very much.
Thanks.
Sorry it takes so much time. Bob and Parker, come on up. We've already had this one to focus on workforce development, and I've invited Bob McGorn, who is the head of your department head in food science and technology, and the Jacob Bush professor. And to my left here, Parker Cooper, who is was a student of ours and who now is quality assurance manager at Kroger Dairy in Portland. And good to have them joining us. So to talk a little bit about workforce development, because we held some of the questions for here about how many students and where, and
sure.
I think Bob can probably handle those. So.
Thank you, Bill. For the record, I'm Bob McGorn, Department Head of Food Science at Oregon State University. So as you're hearing, the lens that I'd like to talk about this morning and testify this morning is just about the growth of our program and just how you've heard about the impact that's had in terms of the parallel growth of the industry. We certainly mirror in terms of the numbers of students that we've seen. I've been a department head since 2000. Since I came, we had about 40 students total in the program. As of today, we have 230. So we're seeing that 500% growth in terms of the student population, which reflects two things, primarily the quality of the program and the job opportunities that the students see when they graduate from OSU. And clearly that it's the envy. When I've been the past chair of the department heads group of the food science group across the United States, and there's a tremendous envy when they hear about our program here, just not only about having a brewing program and a wine program, but also an artisan cheese program, and now coming online this fall, a distilled spirits program. It's truly, we're in a unique position, truly, in the United States. We're the go-to place in terms of where students want to come to get that quality education that can be translated to industry needs. I wanted to give you so in terms of where we're looking, the question was asked before about are we capping growth. We cannot do that at Oregon State University. We're an open institution, but what we can do, and we've actually had significant discussion among the faculty, is raising the GPA requirements and raising the grade point average that the students have to maintain in the program, and that's one way to put a growth cap on it. We certainly are right now are managing under stress. We have about the same number of faculty teaching a program that has really grown, as I said, fivefold. So the issue has become, as you've heard other folks testify this morning, is maintaining that quality, maintaining that hands-on experience that our students get, which is so important in terms of an applied program like a food science and technology. We are a science-based program. We're the science of food. And so the students are getting that breadth of food chemistry, food microbiology, and food physics or engineering. They're getting all those aspects as part of the training. So we are a STEM discipline, science, technology, engineering, and math. We are an officially recognized STEM discipline in the science of food. So they do, our students, the unique training they get from a four-year program like ours at Oregon State is having that foundation in the science and then having the applicability to translate that to the food industry and beverage industry needs and fermentation. So the first example, the slide I have up here, is talking about our Beaver Classic Cheese program. And you see Tyler Linscott is a graduate of the program who, what you're seeing then is it's a full build-out of hands-on in terms of students learning all stages of cheese production, milk and curd handling, aging, quality control, packaging, and even some aspects involving sales and marketing. So we are, this product, I brought some examples here. The original product, there are now 7 stock keeping units of this, of the Beaver Classic cheese. It's sold in retail channels such as it's been in Costco. It's currently sold in Market of Choice. It's sold 24/7 on our webpage, and it's also, we will be in Safeway fairly shortly. So this is an opportunity to talk about the training that students get, their real-world training they can have, basically walk out the door on their graduation and go work for one of the dairies and creameries in the state of Oregon and have that workforce training directly. So the other aspect, if you could advance the slide, Bill.
Yes.
So this is a photo of Parker Cooper. Parker is sitting next to me, and he was a graduate of our program in June 2013. And certainly after working on a product which was called The Peak, which was called Parker's Peak by nickname when Parker was with us, it actually won the American Cheese Society Blue Ribbon Award last year in Sacramento. This was just mind-blowing in terms of the impact on the industry, because we were competing against commercial companies to get that award in that category. So it was truly a testament to the excellence of the product as judged by independent cheese graders in terms of its quality. The other thing I was going to point out is we have a variety. We have 7 varieties. I brought 4 here, and I'm going to leave samples of the others for you. The hop is actually a crossover product. So it's using Cascade hops, talking about the development of the hop variety by Al Honnold at Oregon State University, and certainly an important part of our heritage, and now it's being used in a cheese and dairy products part of the fermentation science program. So it's meant to integrate across that. So I'd like to turn it over to Parker. Parker is going to talk about his experience after graduating from the program, and currently is the manager of quality assurance at Kroger Swan Island Dairy in Portland.
Hi. Thank you for having me here today. My name's Parker Cooper. As Dr. McGoran said, I'm the QA manager at Swan Island Dairy, and I just want to tell you guys a little bit about how going to Oregon State really has changed my life. The program there, it has been instrumental in making me successful. I decided to go back to school as an older student. I was a post-bac. I originally got a degree from Reed College in anthropology, and then I sold cheese for 3 years and decided, hey, I think I'd like to maybe get into the production of cheese instead of selling it. And you know, with my passion for dairy, I looked around at food science programs all over the U.S. I still remember driving down to Corvallis to visit the food science department. And once I visited the pilot dairy and I learned that they would be starting up a cheese program, I was absolutely smitten. I was sold on it. And the food science department at Oregon State, it did a great job in preparing me for a career in the food industry. The curriculum is challenging, but it's also fun. I actually still look at a lot of my old notes from classes when I need to reference something. I got a great foundation in the sciences with classes like organic chemistry, microbiology, biochemistry, process engineering. But I also took classes like food law, packaging, dairy processing, you know, food systems chemistry, and these are still helpful on a day-to-day basis in my current position. Actually, the food safety class, I'm going to be playing a clip from that where the professor plays this audio clip to everybody who takes it about this woman, her experiences getting botulism. And it's absolutely harrowing, you know, to listen to how it affected her. She's lucky to be alive. And that's one thing about Oregon State is they really taught me to care about my job, and they have the passion for students, and that lives on. You know, my job is to make sure that all the products that come out of my plant are of good quality, but also safe. You know, I think everybody's probably heard about the recent listeria concerns, and, you know, what is important is that, you know, these products are in thousands and thousands of people's home. You know, Swan Island Dairy distributes flu dairy products in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Alaska. And it's a big deal to make sure that these are safe, and that is one thing that was instilled upon me at Oregon State. You know, I also had a number of unique learning experiences that were just as important as the classes I took. you know, talking about from the beginning to the end, making and selling this cheese. I got to sit on the board that came up with the name and the logo of Beaver Classic. I got to work making Beaver Classic, and I've learned so much in working in that pilot plant that's helped me with my career. You know, one thing is I got my Appendix N certification to release raw milk. You know, that's where you test to make sure it doesn't have antibiotics, because some people are allergic to antibiotics. And I actually just had my certification renewed 2 weeks ago. I also learned about, you know, testing product for things like butterfat, pH, doing microplating, all of this, which I still use on a day-to-day basis. Another thing that I learned working in the cheese plant was processing equipment. You know, I think the brewers talked a little bit about the hands-on aspect of it, and it actually is, it is really important whether you're a processor or you're working in quality. You know, a lot of not only foreign material contamination, but also microbial contamination can come from, you know, can come from equipment that is not either washed properly or is not put together properly. You know, and I still remember Mark Bates, who was managing the creamery at that time. You know, he showed me how to take apart a centrifugal pump and clean it and put it back together. And it seems like that's not a very big deal, but in my role as a QA manager, you know, it's really important for me to know how to do that if I'm going to tell somebody else how to take apart a pump and put it back together. One thing I've used is that you know, at my job at Westover Dairy, which is another Kroger dairy, you know, I conducted a pump training class for the mechanics to show them how to properly put the pump back together. I initiated a pump preventative maintenance program that maximized pump seal life, as well as tracking pump seal changes to make sure that all the pumps were getting serviced, you know, that none of them were getting missed. And, you know, pump seals, they're made of really fragile carbon, and you have to get it in there just right. And these seal kits cost from $200 to $2,000. So, you know, there was one night where a mechanic put three seals in a pump because he didn't do it right. You know, so when you look at that, and that comes directly from the bottom line of a business. Something else I learned at Oregon State was what to do when things go wrong. You know, stuff goes wrong all the time, I think, no matter where you're working. You know, I think it's an overlooked blessing in disguise. You don't automatically think that having problems is a good thing, but actually did a really good job in preparing me for the day-to-day problems that, that I come to face in my career. You know, one example from Oregon State is we had some unwanted mold growing in one of the cheese rooms. You know, we try to have a certain type of organism colonizing that room. You know, we don't want to get like black mold in, that's bad. But you know, how to get through it, we did some really deep cleaning, got it out. You know, one thing about my job now is people are always bringing me problems that I have to make, and I have to make informed decisions. You know, and Mark Bates, he was always calm, and he approached problems methodically. You know, and so now whether it's 30 pallets that don't have a code date, or tankers that are leaking milk into a storm drain, or trying to narrow down like where microbial contamination could be in a whole system of pumps and pipes and valves and gaskets, you know, I try to mirror his calm and systematic approach to problems. And that's something that's really hard to teach, you know, and you can only really get from that hands-on that I got at Oregon State. One thing is that the value of hard work cannot be overlooked when it comes to being successful. One of the most valuable experiences I had working in the pilot plant was cleaning. When you think of cheese making, you think of, you know, cutting curd, packing cheese molds, cheese being pressed and flipped, you know, all that cool stuff. But in reality, it's about 90% cleaning. You know, after making cheese, we would clean everything in the pilot plant. We would clean every table. We would clean the cheese press, the cheese molds. You know, we would have to clean the cheese, the tanker that we brought the milk in. And then all the way down to scrubbing the floor. Every single time we did everything, we had to clean everything. And when I say clean, I mean scrub. And this is something that you know, I think a lot of people have an idea. If you've ever seen that Scrubbing Bubbles commercial, the Scrubbing Bubbles commercial is a lie. You cannot spray something with a solution and expect it to be clean. You have to actually get in there and scrub. And that's what I learned at Oregon State. And that's what I now take to people on my sanitation crew, teaching them, you know, the principles of sanitation, that no, you can't just foam this. You got to get a brush. You got to get in there. You got to get into the nasty, you know, crooks, all the little crevices, and you got to get in there and scrub. And that's what I learned, you know, at Oregon State. And actually, my parents came up to visit, and they saw me cleaning, and they're like, whoa. They're like, you never do this good a job cleaning your kitchen. Well, I eat in my kitchen, you know I have a healthy immune system, but other people eat this product, you know. So you got to make sure that it's clean. So, yes, scrubbing. Don't believe the scrubbing bubbles. You got to get in there. You got to put in some elbow grease, and you know that the scrubbing bubbles. I'm constantly fighting that mindset, you know. But that's one thing that I learned, you know, with my practical experience. Probably one of the most important learning experiences I had at Oregon State was being Dr. Goddick's teaching assistant. You know, I had the opportunity to run cheese-making labs, work on new cheese recipes, sometimes not successfully, but it's the effort that counts, and grade papers. You know, the leadership experience from running cheese-making classes in the pilot dairy set me up for my current role as a senior staff member. You know, it's not always easy telling people what to do. And back when I was working in the pilot plant, you know, I was known as the hairnet police, and that's what I am still today. You know, gotta have your hairnet, gotta wash your hands. And, you know, I'd never been in a role where I was telling other people what to do. So this leadership experience was invaluable to me, and I know that it helped me get a job. And I did. I was successful in getting a job right after graduation, as were all of my friends from Oregon State Food Science Program. So, you know, the experiences I had at Oregon State, they set me up to succeed in the food industry. I can honestly say that going back to school changed my life for the better. I now have a job with benefits and upward mobility. But most importantly, I know that what I do matters. I care about my work because I know that my product is in thousands of people's homes and that I am responsible for that product to be safe. And Oregon State taught me these values, and I will be forever grateful for the learning experiences that I had there. I really think that you can't put a dollar amount on having a safe food supply. And that is what the Food Sciences program does at Oregon State. And thank you very much for having me here today.
Thank you, Parker.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McClellan.
Well, I have a comment. If they haven't asked you to do an advertisement yet, they need to get
need
you to
do one.
Of anti-scrubbing bubbles?
No. Oregon State University needs to put you on a little short contract.
Yeah. I love dairy, so it makes it easy. And also, the great thing about Oregon State is, you know, I got that hands-on experience. You know, I graduated from Reed. It's a small college, well-renowned. Even then, I didn't get the hands-on experience, the one-to-one with professors that I got at Oregon State. You know, Dr. Goddick took me under her wing and helped me succeed. Mark Bates was instrumental in teaching me what I know today. And even all the professors that I had, you know, I still go back to Oregon State. They see me and say, hey, Parker, then remember my name. I don't think a single professor at Reed would know my name, you know. And I told my family, I was just home in Alabama last week, and I said, if I'm ever rich, I'm going to give money to Oregon State, but I won't give any to Reed College.
Oh, you're on record now.
I won't pass that along to John.
We won't tell them.
They don't need it. Well, Oregon State helped me get a great job, and they do something really important. We cannot overvalue the safety of our food supply. That's what it comes down to. You know, with the, I don't know if you guys have followed the current listeria problems with Bluebell ice cream, mm-hmm. which is, you know, in my Texas. Southern home, like that kind of stuff kills people. And that's what we do every day is we make sure our product keeps people safe, and that's what I learned at Oregon State.
Thank you.
Chair?
Yes?
I'll bet your Parker shower's got more brushes than you ever saw.
It could be.
So I just had a few more. How are we doing on time?
Sorry.
I think we're probably... Just wrap up.
Parker, before we close up here, part of workforce development, and it has every appearance that you're a consummate success story. Can you give us some kind of idea of what and the ranges for entry-level wages for folks that come out of the program that you did?
Well, speaking for the dairy industry, entry-level is about $40,000 a year, which when I was selling cheese, at the most, I was making
$25,000. Yeah.
For me, and now I'm making more, and we'll continue to make more. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. You have a lot of people who, I have friends from Reed who, you know, the ones that didn't choose to go to law school, you know, who are still like selling coffee, making like $20,000 a year. You know, these are good jobs in the dairy industry that support families, help people buy houses, and then put their own kids through school. You know, it's
So Bob, you probably have a better sense.
And then he probably knows too.
Sure. Yes. Right. So we're looking at national salaries around $50,000 for a bachelor's degree, and it varies in some of these industries. It's a demand. You know, if the larger brewing companies will hire students, they could be upwards of $60,000. Oregon jobs in the range we're looking at about the $40,000 to $50,000 range. Give or take a little bit, but that's where these jobs are. They're truly family wage jobs.
So, Dean Bogus, it's not only value added for Oregon's agricultural products, but it's value added for Oregon's workforce as well.
Exactly. So I will make one quick point that what we've done on the sort of the wine enology and brewing sort of thing is all those students are certified food scientists. Mm-hmm. So there are other states where you can go get a viticulture or enology degree, but you're not certified as a food scientist. You're great to work in a winery, but if you need to go someplace where HACCP or whatever, you know, some of the jobs are romantic but don't have benefits. But if you have that certification, you go into a small business and say, well, you know, I got a family, moved to Kraft. $80,000, you've got that basic certification. So we've avoided trying to have something just fermentation sciences. We have food science, we have viticulture, we have crop science, and the viticulture students come out as certified horticulture students. They can go work in hazelnuts or whatever else if they decide that the viticulture industry isn't the right industry. And so we've taken a little bit of a different track there, but that depth, particularly if you move from, say, wine, the alcohols, the food safety issues are not nearly as serious as they are in dairy. So if you move from an alcohol to the dairy, you need to really know the food science, the food safety piece of it. So that's one of our approaches. So these students have a lot of flexibility to move within the broader food science industries.
And they certainly have a lot of hands-on training. So they have internships. Part of our program, we try to get a good percentage of our students have internships, and they also can have research, undergraduate research opportunities or graduate research opportunities, working with a professor over the summer or working during the year on a very practical project that has an end and a real meaningful work experience.
Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm trying to look a little bit further ahead, if possible. I mean, I'm enjoying the beer. I'm enjoying the distilled spirits that we're coming up with, and the cheese and others. But we also have kombucha and kimchi. And a number of other things that are fermented items. And I'm wondering whether, in fact, where you are, whether we're looking at those, and what may be the next steps, not just those two.
We have a course we call Topics in Fermentation, and we've had Kimchi was one we taught last year. We've taught sauerkraut. We have pickles. We have all these other products that we teach as part of a rotation. The faculty and the fermentation faculty rotate through these and offer topical classes. So the students are getting more rounded out than just, you know, the focal point of our program is around the brewing and the wine and the cheese, but we do have a broader program in fermentation as well.
Thank you. Follow up,
please.
This is the kind of thing I'm. We already had pickles were and sauerkraut, mm-hmm. not at all uncommon. I think we've had those companies in the state for 100 years or more, something like that. But I'm just curious about whether we have what the next steps might be. Are we going to be bringing in other crops to really be dealing with fermentation or not? And I have a particular interest in yeast because I did my research on yeast. So I'm just curious about whether we have whether we're going to be doing some other things using that mm-hmm. as well.
I think we're basically focused around yeast fermentations. I mean, even products like chocolate have to go through a fermentation step.
Thank you very much.
And so, we are basically, I mean, we're in Oregon looking at our 200-plus commodities and trying to support that. You know, I came from Illinois where you had corn and soybeans and hogs. That was basically your three commodities. So you do have, we try to support those niches of our state's economy that has an impact. I mean, chocolate would be great to get into, but, you know, we do have some chocolate companies, but I think the biggest volume of these agricultural commodities is around the ones that were mentioned in Dr. Boggess' opening slides.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman. We appreciate the invitation.
Thank you so very, very much. What a wonderful, wonderful presentation. I think certainly among the very best that we've seen this legislative session. Thank you so much.
Can I say one?
Please, Vice Chair McClain.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just wanted to say, you've got it down pat, and you need to go back to your communication department and tell them that you guys all get A pluses.
Okay.
Because it's a situation where it's easy to have a lot of information, you know, come at us, but this information was really useful, and it was organized, and it was well presented. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Wonderful job. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Gallagher, can you please tell us what we have as coming events?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Thursday, May 21st, we're going to have an informational session regarding slugs as a particularly difficult and expensive agricultural pest. OSU will be back again, and also we'll have industry presentations on that.
Very good. Committee members, if you would think about possibly a field trip, maybe where we would go and visit OSU, say late morning, and we'd have a lunch someplace, and then we could maybe go on a wine tour or something like that as kind of a wrap up for our committee's work. So if that sounds appealing, please let me know. Anything else for the good of the order?
Thank you.
Seeing none, we stand adjourned. Thank you all very much. Seeing none.